Hey everyone, don't forget that this Friday, September 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time is the fourth episode of The Last Stream on the Left. Remember, the more you guys that watch live, the more it helps us out. Just go to adultswim.com/stream at 7:30 p.m. Eastern this Friday, September 2nd. Now please, enjoy the Menendez Brothers Part 2.
There's no place to escape to.
This is The Last Podcast
on the Left.
Cannibalism started.
What was that?
Yeah, baby. There's nothing sexier than two Cuban boys just rolling around each other like a couple of snakes with fucking sombreros on. Cubans don't wear sombreros,
no.
Right? I don't mean to be racist. I just don't know.
Yes, I don't believe that's part of the Cuban culture.
But they do have a ceremonial hat. Every culture have a ceremonial hat?
The Cuban has that nice brimmed hat that goes well with a cigar.
Yeah. The Cubano.
Or
Cubano's a cigar.
Or the Che Guevara hat makes you look like you're a socialist.
That's a beret.
Yes.
But that's how you say beret in Spanish. But in French, it's bleh.
I don't know.
It's a pancake hat.
Yes, that's what they're called. All right, welcome to the show. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. With us as always, who is he?
I am Cultural Ambassador Henry Zebrowski.
Wow.
And the American ceremonial hat is the beer helmet.
Oh, exciting. I was hoping it was the Wisconsin cheese head.
No. That's, you cannot say that actually legally on the show because it's been branded by the Packers.
What? I can say it.
Branding is big now.
Oh my God.
They own the cheese hat. No one else can have a cheese hat now because of your people.
Oh, leave them alone. All right. Well, we are on part two of the Menendez brothers, and I guess it just gets more disgusting from here, huh?
It definitely gets weirder from here. It's a very funny story. Yeah. If you take out the object sessions, it's a very funny story.
The two people deceased, murdered by their children.
Oh, they were pieces of shit. I mean, they kind of had it coming. You can't really say that
no.
they... I mean, you know...
I will say, I have a small inside source. Our friend Dave, who designed the many logos for KF Comedy Radio, his sister has a friend who grew up next to the Menendez family, and the mother used to give her a lot of orange juice. So she was a good mom, and she used to give a lot of orange juice to children.
What's she's doing with all this extra orange juice? What, are they made out of money?
I have no idea. Maybe she's squeezing the oranges herself. I don't know. She was bored.
So when we last left the Menendez brothers, they had murdered their parents in cold blood, and when the police arrived on the murder scene, Eric and Lyle continued the histrionics that they had displayed previously in the 911 call.
Eric, shut up! Eric, shut up! I'm on the phone, Eric!
I love that bit where he's going, like, shut up, I'm trying to...
Yeah, Elliot Rodgers or these guys, who is more obnoxious as a human being?
Oh, Elliot Rodgers. Elliot Rodgers because of the YouTube channel.
Yeah, can you imagine if the Menendez brothers did have YouTube? I don't think they would have killed their parents, quite frankly.
I honestly think they would have had their YouTube channel would have probably been somewhere in the 2,000 to 3,000 range. It would have been them talking about their watches and their natural V's that they got from constantly playing tennis.
Years of physical abuse.
Yeah, well, those histrionics were so convincing that the detective on the scene didn't even check their hands for shotgun blast residue, which is pretty standard practice in cases like these.
Assholes.
Yeah, because, of course, you know, when you have someone that comes on the scene, you know, there's these two guys are the first ones that find the family. Of course, it's just, you're just going to check it for shotgun blast residue, and if that detective would have done that, then the Menendez brothers would have been arrested immediately.
Well, they apparently went to a big extent to what we're going to find out after they shot them. They went to the guest house, stripped off all their clothes, and took showers first. I imagine together.
Oh, yeah. Well, you want to save water.
Absolutely.
That's actually environmental of them.
And you want to do penis kisses.
Oh,
you know, you and your brothers.
That's true.
So the first indication that the cops had that something might be a little odd here was when the brothers showed back up at the murder scene of their parents at 5:30 a.m. the next morning to see if they could go inside and get their tennis rackets.
Well, they wanted to play, and to some degree, this would probably make their father proud. You know, even if you kill us, you go back to practice. Even if you blow my brains out with a shotgun, you practice the next day.
Oh, and I guess that it would also be true. They're like, we're grieving. This is about grief, and I gotta say, because it comes down to, I gotta work on my short game.
Yes, I also wish, you remember those Canon Andre Agassi videos, the commercials where the picture, just want to see them shoot their parents, and then
spattered with blood, playing with the rebel camera. Yeah,
great camera. camera.
So two memorial services were held for Jose and Kitty, one in Princeton, New Jersey, where the family had lived previous, and one in Los Angeles, paid for by Live Entertainment to try to dispel all of the mob connection rumors that were swirling around.
Also, they had just made a gigantic deal. Like, right before Jose was murdered, he was working on, they had received the distribution rights of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon series, and they were shipping out the VHSs. So if you had gotten the season, like the special highlight videos of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles back in the day in 1988, you paid him money.
Really? I guarantee you that I did.
Yes. Yeah, he was actually on television. I saw a television interview with him where he had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles tape. Like, it was the animated one. We all gave Jose Menendez money. We're complicit.
I kind of love him now, and they should have never shot his brains out.
But literally what he said, he's like, we're at Live Entertainment. What we do every time is we give the people what they want.
Have you ever heard a Cuban?
Cuban is... I just don't understand the difference. I know that Espanol, if you're from Spain, you talk like this. Castilian. And Cuban is like...
That's getting there. Yeah, that's right? Close. Yes.
Okay, cool, thank you. The club. What's the one with the... They got the saxophones and the clarinets.
Copacabana?
Yep.
Boom.
So what we've got here is an interview that Eric did after one of these memorial services.
I've never seen anything like it. Never will see anything like it. Probably the hardest thing I've probably ever had to. They weren't real. They didn't look.
Yeah.
They wax. They looked like wax. It was it's something that I've never seen my dad helpless. You know, I think that possibly if Lau and I would have been home, if we would have been able to do something about it, maybe my dad would be alive. I definitely would give my life for my dad's.
I would give that lie a 6.4.
Yeah, he's got four Pinocchios on that one. Not good.
So just 3 days after the murder, the spending spree began. In the first 6 months following their parents' death, Eric and Lyle spent around $1 million of their dead father's money. And about $700,000 of that was just in the first few weeks. And to flaunt it even more, they even drove around Los Angeles in their dead mother's car.
Nothing makes a girl wetter than seeing a guy driving around in his dead mom's car.
Oh yeah, that is really
this
that's
is my dead
material.
Mother's car right here. Oh yeah, you like it? Like, my mom's warm bottom sometimes sat in this driver's seat, and sometimes she sat in the passenger seat if I was driving her to the pharmacy to get her medication.
You know, Wendy, I never really liked Lyle before. I didn't think he was really hot, but something about him has changed.
You could still smell her bottom in here.
Oh wow.
Of course, these guys are spending all this money, but they had to do something with their lives eventually. See, Lyle had always dreamed of owning a restaurant.
Everybody who wants to own a restaurant always says this, that always wanted to have a restaurant. You have no clue how difficult it is to own a restaurant. You are guaranteed to lose money in the first couple of years of owning the business, and that's if you're a chef, like a professional chef.
And then Gordon Ramsay has to show up, and your restaurant is deemed a nightmare.
He dresses you down, and he fingers two or three of your waitresses. They have to be immediately hushed up, and that takes cash to give them that money.
That would be... Now, that's the reality show Gordon Ramsay needs to have.
Him going from waitress to waitress, paying them off, and the various things they have to do in order to earn the money for him to pay them so that they don't tell the media how he finger-banged them like they were a fucking ventriloquist dummy.
Sold. Why don't we say this whenever we go to pitch a show? Why aren't we pitching the show?
I get it. It's called Gordon's Finger Puppets.
Yeah, Gordon's Nasty Chicken.
Oh, Gordon's Nasty Chicken.
You want Gordon's Nasty Chicken.
Okay. So, yeah, Lyle, he had this whole restaurant dream. So he went back to Princeton, New Jersey, and he tried to buy a pizza joint called Teresa's, but he somehow managed to offend the owner in the process of buying the business, and the owner refused to sell. Although we have no idea what he actually did to offend the owner.
I imagine that it's his entire demeanor.
Yeah.
Like, literally just show up and be like, excuse me, I'm sorry, I would love to buy your pizza place, but my belt buckle's too shiny, actually. I'm literally blinding myself just standing here. Turn these lights down, you're a bitch.
Probably went something like that.
Well, after he was refused at Teresa's Pizza, he settled for a buffalo wing spot named Chuck's Spring Street Cafe and renamed it more appropriately, but idiotically, because it destroyed the reputation Chuck's had built over the years, he renamed it Mr. Buffalo's.
That's ridiculous.
I don't know. I always end up siding with one of these sociopaths at some point. I gotta say, Mr. Buffalo's is a hell of a name.
Buffalo's, where are we coming here for, all right? Chucks, it sounds like we're going to this restaurant to buy vomit. It's called Mr. Buffalo's. Because again, you treat a man named Buffalo with respect. You call him Mr.
You have to. They have a bucket of beer for $7 on Tuesdays. I mean, I love Mr. Buffalo's.
My problem is you can't just be some rich boy from Beverly Hills who shows up, decides to buy a Buffalo chicken wing fucking restaurant. You need to be named called, you have to be like Rodney. Needs to be your name. You need to be Eddie.
Eddie's a perfect name for a restaurant.
Yeah. So for Eric's part, instead of buying a restaurant, Eric continued on the path of the tennis player. He hired a private coach for $60,000 a year and began to buy his way into professional tournaments, specifically tournaments in Israel.
Interesting. I wonder why.
In Israel, it is weird. Like, we don't actually know why it was Israel.
Do they have, like, a pay-to-play system over there kind of thing? They're literally just buying their way into tournaments because he wasn't good enough.
No.
And so and that's also so fucked up, that's how deep Jose's programming got into him, that he continued to keep this fucking lie alive, like he was going to be a professional tennis player.
Yeah. It is all lies. Yeah. What money can allow people to make believe?
It's all he was doing. It is just fantastic what it can do for you.
I can't wait. Whenever I get a lot of money, I'm going to tell everyone I'm 5'10". And just be like, no, that's the truth now.
Yeah, you just walk around. You just have you're like Dorf, and you got sneakers on your knees.
Yeah, and they're like, what's the weather up there? And I'd be like, it's the same as where you are because I'm the same size as you.
You are, you short man.
Yes.
Well, speaking of the money, the boys, of course, never forgot about the inheritance, because at this point, all this money they're spending, this is just out of Jose's life insurance policy. So the boys brought in two different quote-unquote computer experts to come in and wipe the hard drive of the family's computer, fearing that it might contain a different will that would either cut them out completely or give even just a little bit of the money to somebody besides them.
Because that's apparently one of the triggers, that the reason why they killed Jose is because he was threatening to cut them out of the will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And one of the computer experts that came through and wiped the hard drive, one of them said that the entire experience just made his skin crawl.
Ooh, and these are computer guys. They're creepier than anybody else.
They're literally human snails.
So while Lyle knew how to keep his mouth shut, it was just a part of Eric's personality to talk about every single detail of his life, according to family members. And that would, of course, apply to the murders.
You mean an intention whore? The two of them were both, they just loved to talk about this crime. They talk about, like, they couldn't keep their mouth shut. Eric was a born actor, but he just had everything but skill. He had all the bad
facts. Just a liar.
Of being yes.
What, I mean, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but this whole time, this whole spending spree, I mean, they have to have eyes all over them. People have to be like, this is a little suspicious, right?
The cops were trailing them because they were building the case against them. They pretty much knew, like, once you saw the nature of the crime, once you saw how, like, because as they said, it was obviously a murder of passion, the boys, first thing that came out is said, the mob must have done it. They had to have done it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, the mob normally will either take you out to a weird location and put two in the back of your head, roll you in a fucking tarp and hide the body. They don't just bust in your house and blow you up like it's fucking OK Corral. They obviously, there's an emotional attachment to these crimes.
Yeah, they make you a carpet burrito.
And they're also bad liars.
The Menendez brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, of course, yeah.
Well, the first confession came only 12 days after the murders, when Eric made the confession we mentioned in the last episode to his screenwriting buddy Craig. The two of them were playing chess. Eric asked Craig very nonchalantly, you want to know how he did it? He told Craig, and then the two just went right back to playing chess.
If you're Craig, the answer is no, and then you slowly stand up and walk out of the room backwards.
Never hear a confession.
Never hear a confession, and don't break eye contact.
No,
get out of the room.
You're like, you know what? I'm good. But actually, you want to go to Mr. Buffalo's?
Ooh, I love
hear it's got the shittiest wings, but at the same time, the music's really loud.
Yeah, that's great.
No, well, there was no way that Craig was going to jump off the Menendez gravy train and turn him in. The next confession that Eric made would be the one that would lead them straight to jail. On Halloween 1989, about 2 months after the murders, Eric showed up at the office of his in-law psychologist, L. Jerome O'Zeal.
What is really unfortunate is that Eric showed up in his Halloween costume, which was a male version of Wonder Woman. Oh, and that's how he puts it. He's like, it's like Wonder Man. I'm Wonder Man, but I still have the jaunty corset.
I don't, I just don't get it. I don't.
I'm Wonder Man! I will kill you like I killed my parents. What?
Hold on. You're Wonder Man. You can are Wonder Man. You
can
are.
I get a mulligan? Yeah. So he joined up with L.
Actually, by law, if you do confess to a crime to a police officer, you are allowed one mulligan.
You get one mulligan, legally.
Let him know.
And so, he was involved with their therapist that was handpicked by Jose in order to get all of the secrets that the boys had from him. So basically, this was a crooked Beverly Hills therapist that was easily purchasable, and it was already fucking three of his patients.
Yeah, he was fucking three of his patients. He eventually got his license pulled. This guy was a real piece of shit.
He's like the dad from The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Do you remember that?
Ooh,
and then Rebecca De Mornay had to go murder his whole family.
I just remember her breasts in that film.
Oh my God. That was one of the first times I ever realized I was straight. Rebecca De Mornay. I was like, I like that.
I like it. What? I like that she's got fleshy tops and she's got fleshy bottoms.
That is how
it's I also mean. The only movie I've ever masturbated to with the word cradle in the title.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
Now, O'Zeal said that on the day Eric confessed, he showed up at the office agitated, depressed, and suicidal after seeing photographs of the crime
scene.
Do
you have a closet that I could put my lasso of truth in? It's a lasso of truth. It makes people say the truth, so let me just put it over myself.
Oh, interesting.
He asked O'Zeal to take a walk, and as they were about to go back into the office, Eric leaned against a parking meter and said,
"We did it.
We did it."
Of course he leaned against a parking meter.
Dramatically.
Such a douchey fucking way to confess to a murder.
What I like about the BBC documentary we watched about the Menendez brothers too is that the guy's like, and this very block is the block that they walked, and each block, if you don't know, has four sides to it and a corner. So around one of these corners, Eric Menendez himself was contemplating the confession.
The British love those details.
In the ensuing confession back in the office, Eric told O'Zeal that the two brothers had gotten the whole idea from a movie which ran on NBC just 3 weeks prior called The Billionaire Boys Club.
Good. And which is also a wonderful Bukkake film.
Yes, of course.
If you want to check that out.
Billionaire Man's House is the sequel.
Yes. These kids are really something special.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. They would be possessed to murder from a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah. They are made. This was the perfect 90s crime.
Yeah.
Because all the ins and outs, it's so much fun. We're going to see, like, and this therapist is fucking Steve Brule in the middle of this. He's literally like a fucking, what's his name, George from Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. It's like a character that would be played by him.
Right, napping underneath his desk.
Yeah, during, like a ludicrous human being that is a part of this. Beverly Hills is a cesspool of America.
So the double murders that the brothers committed were almost a straight copycat of the plot of Billionaire Boys Club, even down to what they did after the murders. Now, the plot of the film involved a group of Beverly Hills teens who murder two people, one of which was a billionaire boy's father. And in the movie, one of the victims was shot in the back of the head, just like Jose had been. The Boys Club used a movie as their alibi, just as the brothers had. And one of the billionaire boys had driven a Jeep. One of Eric's first purchases after the insurance policy came in was a Jeep.
Yeah, that's like after the Back to the Future fucking anniversary and a bunch of people go out buying DeLoreans.
Yeah, so they can't get out of their car in a Walmart parking lot because the door's open like a jackass. It'll get ruined.
Now, in a bit of twisted irony, which this case is full of, Billionaire Boys Club was distributed by Live Entertainment, the very company that Jose was serving as CEO at the time of the murders and the source of the Menendez family's great wealth.
That's how lazy they were. This is just proof of how right Jose was to be mad at them.
I agree
with
them.
They literally just came up with the plot for the murder from a VHS movie. It's piles of VHSs of a movie that were just sitting in their father's office. They didn't even have to try hard to come up with the plan for the murder.
And as far as to why their mother Kitty had to be killed, Eric said they just couldn't figure out a way to kill Jose without killing Kitty. And besides, she was so in love with him that she wouldn't be able to live without him anyway. So they were actually doing her kind of a favor.
They did her a favor. It's really sweet of them.
Sort of an Shinrikyo again type logic.
Yeah.
Releasing her from pain or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were thinking. And in contrast to what Eric told his buddy Craig, Eric told Ozeal that he was the one who entered the room first, not Lyle, and started shooting.
That was probably to protect Lyle.
Probably.
Eric is in love with Lyle. He will do anything it takes to take care of Lyle.
Of course.
And so that was his way to sort of like put me in, like make him the aggressor out of nowhere.
Right. And when the mother hadn't died from the initial shots, this is another thing that he had left out of his story to Craig. When the mother hadn't died immediately, both of them went outside to get more shells, came back in, and shot her three more times.
It's always the people you least expect that survive the longest.
Yeah.
She was stronger than we gave her credit for this whole time.
And what I don't want anybody to really take this advice, but at the same time take this advice, if you're going to kill your parents, pull out the gas line, blow up the house.
That's a lot of work, though.
That's what I'm saying. Don't do it right.
But then your house is also blown up, and all your goodies that were inside of it are gone.
So now you get life insurance and house insurance.
Okay. Again, this is a satire show.
That's a satire show. That's certainly not wink, 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 real advice. Wink, wink, wink.
Absolutely not. Disregard those winks. The winks are satire.
Winks are also satire. I am not a lawyer.
You know what? We're giving you a mulligan.
Thank you.
Of course, Eric's confession didn't go down well with Lyle. 2 days later, on November 2nd, Lyle showed up at Ozeal's office with Eric and threatened to kill the therapist if he told anyone.
Lyle was screaming now that he was going to kill anybody that Eric had talked to over the last couple of days.
Right.
Lyle was going nuts, and basically it's because you're going to take away his livelihood. I don't even think he cared about going to jail, because I don't think he thought that was even an option. He just assumed once you're rich, you can buy your way out of anything, and he's actually mostly right.
Totally correct. I mean, he's also really busy figuring out Wednesday's wing special at Mr. Buffalo.
It's like, I've got a new garlic Alfredo chicken wing coming out, and we are running out of napkins.
Is it called the Italian Dickhead? What is that?
Yeah. That's a fabulous name.
I was just joking.
The Italian Dickhead.
Well, oh, right. Well, that's on the menu.
Repaint the signs.
But even after Lyle came in, got all pissed off, said that he was going to kill Dr. Ozeal, he still couldn't help but confess just a little bit himself on both the November 2nd session and a later session in December. He said that they had committed the perfect crime, something that the Billionaire Boys Club had also boasted about. He also said that their dad would have actually been proud of them for pulling this off.
No, you still went to jail, dickhead.
Yeah.
No,
this was before they went to jail.
Sure. But this is not even close to the perfect crime. The perfect crime would be like them on camera being like, if you know where my parents are, please let us know. Everyone knows exactly what happened. The perfect crime would be disposing of the bodies with no one understanding where they possibly went. And then all of a sudden, your sympathy.
See?
You are given sympathy.
And that's not actual legal advice. That's not advice. This is a satire show. I'm just saying, again, I mean, that could really work, but wink, wink, wink. Not really. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the mob does it right with the human burrito.
No, when Ozeal asked Lyle if he missed his parents, Lyle said, quote,
I miss having these people around. I miss not having my dog around. If I could make such a gross analogy.
I don't.
Yes. I'm going to fucking shoot you.
Okay. That's fun.
But what the brothers didn't know was that not only was Ozeal taping all their sessions, but he had also asked his girlfriend at the time, a Miss Judalon Smith, to listen in on the sessions outside the door.
This is just fucking like a farce. It's a comedy film. He's literally fucking three of his patients. The number one mistress that he's fucking right now, he asked to listen, because now that they've already confessed one time, he knows they're going to come back in the office, and he's trying to cover his ass and basically said to her, it's being like, you'll protect me. You're going to sit outside the door. You're going to listen in. And then if anything goes wrong, you call the police. Meanwhile, she then finds out that he's fucking two other of his patients, and now he's completely down Schitt's Creek.
Never record yourself.
No!
Just learn from Nixon. Of course, we are doing a podcast right now.
That's exactly what happened. She listened in on the crimes, and Ozeal, he never went to the police with these confessions, even after Lyle had threatened his life.
Because he offered to set up their whole defense. As they were going through this, he said, he's like, no, listen, I'm your therapist. I'm going to tell everybody that you're sociopaths, and that you couldn't control yourself and that you didn't know the difference between right and wrong. And I will be there making sure that happens for you.
I mean, it's a serious question. Do they have to tell the police if somebody confesses a crime to them? I mean, isn't there some patient confidentiality?
No, they only have to tell the police if there is future possibilities of a crime. If the therapist or the doctor believes that they will commit a crime in the future, then the patient doctor confidentiality is breached and they can report anything.
You also get the same thing when you talk to a priest, but at the same time, the priest can then say, well, then I'm going to invoice you one, you suck my penis.
Oh, that's correct. Yes.
Yeah. And so this ex-girlfriend, she got super pissed off at Ozeal and decided that the best way to get back at him would be to go to the police and tell them everything she knew about the Menendez brothers.
And then Lyle was picked up on his way to the Cheesecake Factory in his neon yellow Jeep.
Between Chris Farley and Lyle, they both like the Cheesecake Factory and they both had terrible kind of lives there.
God. My family swore off the Cheesecake Factory because, as my mom said, that cake is dry.
That's why?
Yes.
Is that because it's extremely unhealthy and disgusting?
No, it's dry. It wasn't sopping wet enough with buttermilk.
So, Lyle was picked up on his way to the Cheesecake Factory. Eric was in Israel playing tennis at the time, and he flew home and was arrested as well.
And that's where we had the tennis coach being like, and I told him, I was like, I'm going to use my tennis psychology to, it's just like, what you got to do is get back on the offensive. And he was like trying to stay on the payroll throughout this whole procedure. These people, man. And
these guys are white trash with money. Yeah. The Cheesecake Factory, you're multimillionaires. This is where you're going to go eat.
They're all dickheads. And then all of the family jumps onto this bandwagon of trying to create their alibi of the molestations because they know if they don't, they're going to get cut out of the money. They have to keep the money in the family.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So since the brothers had made detailed confessions on tape, they had no choice but to admit that they had actually killed their parents. The question for the defense: why? Why did they kill their parents? What was the motivation?
They took away our Sega Genesis.
I mean, it seems to me like the cops are at this point just get away. They want them to get away with it, it seems like. The cops, I mean, don't you think they would have just been arrested immediately had they not been white, had they not been wealthy?
Oh, yeah. Well, right, yeah, weren't white, though. Think about that. That's a weird race thing, right? Normally, we've now assumed that they're white. They look sort of white. They've got light skin, but they are Spanish. Mm. They're just rich. I mean, that just shows how rich what it can do for you.
Yeah. Makes you white. I guess. I don't know.
So this right here is Eric on the stand during the trial, answering the question of why they actually killed their parents.
What do you believe was the originating cause of you and your brother ultimately winding up shooting your parents?
Me telling.
You telling what?
Me telling Lyle that,
You telling Lyle what? Was it you telling Lyle about something that was happening?
My dad.
Okay. Oh.
My dad.
Verona, can I ask a leading question?
If you don't ask...
My dad.
Good. Wait 1 second, Mr. Hernandez. Okay, let me ask.
No, he was in the process of answering, so there's no need to ask him.
Can you answer the question?
Yes.
Okay, was you telling Lyle what?
My dad had been molesting me.
Molest!
Oh my God, I just want Adam Sandler to stand up and be like, today, Junior!
That's the thing. So now they're really playing it up. They're definitely playing it, like how hard it was for him to say that they were molested, because also they were a 21-year-old and an 18-year-old boy, both currently apparently being made love to by their father. I'm going to say made love to.
I don't know why you would say that.
Because of the emotions that were there.
It does sort of sound like he was getting sucked off by a father figure. My dad.
Yeah, I do feel like the same audio could be played in one of those Silverback movies I've heard about.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the entire defense was that the boys had killed their parents after years of sexual abuse on the part of both Jose and Kitty, but mostly at the hands of Jose. This is how they said the whole thing went down, how the murder actually happened. Now, as we mentioned in the first episode, Lyle had been wearing a toupee from the age of 14.
Bald piece of shit.
That's insane.
God, his father just was fucking throwing combs out. Yeah. Buying combs just to throw them out, just to make him humiliated.
That is how you make a supervillain.
Yeah.
You could already see Lex Luthor wearing a toupee at 14.
Now, Lyle always insisted that the toupees be made from 100% human hair, with his favorite piece being the Model 124X, which cost in the neighborhood of $1,500.
It's called the brunette dickhead.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't want it to be 100% human eyes.
Like, and after I saw the pictures of Lyle, when everyone kept saying, you could not believe that this hairpiece was fake. It was just seamless. It's just a perfect head of hair. It looks like he's got a gerbil trained sitting on his skull. You can see the line. $1,500.
Yeah. That's the best they could do. It was top notch. That's top of the line. Yeah. And, you know, male toupees, they're not like women's wigs. You can't just pop them on your skull and go about your day. According to one of those Vanity Fair articles, a toupee involves elaborate preparations before the bathroom mirror and various means of attachment, such as glue, hooks, and lure locks.
I mean, I gotta say, I have some sympathy for this poor 14-year-old going through the same makeup, the same daily routine as a 94-year-old person who's just a World War II vet.
He's literally turning into Kevin Spacey from American Beauty, but he's 14 years old.
Yeah, and Lyle, in the words of one person who worked at Lyle's hair clinic, he was, quote, consumed by his hair.
I kind of understand it.
Of course. Maybe it's brutal. It is brutal.
It's got to be confusing. He finally got pubic hair, and then all the hair in his head is gone. Maybe he thought it just like went down there.
Yeah, I just feel like that. Then it turns into a weird African folk tale of like, and then the top pairs be scared by the furious winds and move to the down south.
Yeah, and Jose, his best friend, said that Jose talked about Lyle's hair all the time. He's like, Lyle's very worried about his hair. He's constantly worried about it. He's always talking about it.
Of course he did, because the father also hates that he has a bald son.
Because his fucking 14-year-old son looks like Darth Vader when he took off the mask.
So, in other words, Lyle's bald head, it was kind of an open secret. Everybody knew that Lyle had a bald head. But despite all of this evidence, Eric and Lyle, who, as we said, were constantly up each other's asses, claimed that Eric never knew his brother wore a toupee.
Mm. That's the thing about the toupee. I don't know what social agreement we've all decided to come up with here. When people have hair plugs or toupees, we're just supposed to go along with the lie?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when somebody loses their face in the war, and then you have to put like one of those weird plastic fake faces on there, and we all have to be like, looking good, Greg. You know, I'm like, you're looking really good, huh?
Thanks, yeah.
See, you can wear sunglasses look at now. This. You could just say stuff like that, and you have to stay really positive.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Christina, the psychology expert who definitely exists. She sent me an email and said that it was highly unlikely that the brothers were fucking each other.
But how did she say it?
Yeah, that wasn't Christina.
It's
highly unlikely that the brothers were engaging in sexual intercourse with one another.
I could just see Carol. I could just see Pickle girlfriend knocking on the door being like, is the session over yet, Marcus? Can I come into the bedroom again as you're...
Not yet! 14 more minutes until the email has been done with the composition.
That's great. I mean, you
Pickle boyfriend, I'm going to leave.
Yeah, gotta go. Henry, you
see
were... Wow. The hours and hours of acting training that you've gone through, Henry. What do you think, hundreds of hours?
I would say up to 12 hours of acting training.
And then Marcus has none, but he's a better actor than you.
I mean, it's just sometimes, look at Lyle. Lyle didn't even want to be an actor, better actor than his brother Eric, who wanted to be an actor.
There you go. I don't want to be an actor at all.
Wow. Well, bye, Christina. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, she said that the guys, they loved each other as much as they could love anything, but a lot of times narcissists, which these guys definitely were, they don't really equate sex with love.
Well, it's kind of like in American Psycho when he is fucking the prostitute but looking at himself in the mirror. Mm.
Yeah, exactly. But according to the brothers, on the fateful day that kind of precipitated the entire murder, Kitty, in a fit of rage over God knows what, attacked Lyle and ripped the toupee off his head in front of Eric.
Maybe somebody left the ShamWow in the dryer.
Maybe.
And Eric, supposedly shocked at seeing the brother he looked up to so much, vulnerable and bald for the first time, decided it was time to open up himself.
But what is it like? What a really, you know how like you get into a feel bad for yourself competition with people. People right. say it's like, oh yeah, you know, I was late in the train because someone pulled the emergency stop of the subway. It's just like, oh well, I farted myself to sleep and I couldn't wake up on time. And it's just like literally just being like, the only way to make your brother feel better about being bald is like, well, daddy's been fucking me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's what he told him. He said that he started telling his brother for the first time that their dad had been brutally molesting him since the age of 12. So about 6 years, and had continued to do so to that day.
And well, do we know that that's not the reason why he has hair? You know,
interesting. Maybe the father's cum was like a Rogaine.
Sort of the first Rogaine.
Yes, yes.
I don't know.
You see, also, I find it very nice that Lyle, who couldn't really experience or express emotions very well, put a little attachment to the top of his head that allowed him to spin the tope in order to show that he was surprised or shocked or sad.
Yeah, he had the roll-up tie there, too. He was a fun kind of guy.
And after the confession, Lyle confronted Jose, saying that he was never to touch Eric ever again.
Daddy, next time you want to fuck something, buy a watermelon and cut a hole in it.
And Jose said that Eric was his son and he could do whatever he wanted with him.
I don't know if any of this is true.
It's absolutely not. None of it is true. None of it is absolutely none of it's true. And after this confrontation, the brothers got it in their heads that their parents were going to kill him to keep the molestation a secret. And to prevent this from happening, the brothers all hopped up after a seemingly innocent fishing trip in which they claimed their parents were going to kill them in full view of the fishing boat's captain and the captain's girlfriend. They murdered their parents first.
And that's what they talk about. The captain of this fishing trip, when they went, noticed that the parents were sitting alone on one side of the boat, and the boys are sitting in the front of the boat, pensive, standing there. And he was just like, I knew then that there was tension in the family. But actually, that was the day that they had went and bought the shotguns in San Diego and had come back and then went on the fishing trip. So literally, they were just sitting there planning the murder on the boat.
Well, yeah. I mean, then the captain was correct.
And also,
as most captains are.
Jose's there pulling up marlins, being like, my fucking my baldy son and my gay son won't go fish. They're not doing anything. Yeah. I'm sitting here hauling in nets. I came here from Cuba on a tire, and I'm now a millionaire.
Mm-hmm. I know. I feel bad for Jose. The more that we learn about the family, Jose was right.
Yeah, Jose was absolutely right. Those allegations of sexual abuse, all of this bullshit, they weren't introduced into evidence until 10 days before the trial actually began. By the time the trial actually started, the Menendez brothers had been in jail for 2-3 years.
So they had been planning this defense for literally 2.5 years, and they never mentioned being molested until it came time for their what is the name of their defense attorney? Very fat, like
Leslie Abramson.
Yes, and she came out and she was like quite the showman. If you actually watch the video of her opening statements, they are incredible.
Yeah.
She is very, very good. But that's when they hit them with the molestation idea. No one had heard of that until they showed up, because they waited for the complete impact of the opening statement.
Yeah, and in another bit of irony, molestation or no, it was Jose Menendez's fortune that paid for Lyle and Eric's top shelf defense team.
Of course.
Whew. That's a real blow.
That's
one of those afterlife blows.
So the Menendez brothers defense team was headed up by a woman named Leslie Abramson, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time of the trial, she had saved 12 people from death row, including a doctor who had strangled his 11-year-old son and had cut him into over 200 pieces.
Well, the kid wanted to do too many after school activities, and he wanted to like expand his abilities to get to all the different meetings.
Well, the great irony is that doctor actually wanted his son to grow up and own a Mr. Buffalo's, and the kid didn't want to do it.
Yeah, see, this Abramson, she was a master at knocking witnesses off of their game. She could change moods from one sentence to the next. She was famous for making witnesses break down into tears. Actually, the only person she couldn't shake during the whole trial, Dr. Ozeal, the therapist.
He kept a hard line. He is really good. He was born to be a fucking witness on the stand.
In fact, she was the one that started screaming at him. He was like, You know, I don't know.
I wouldn't know about that. I'm only a therapist, and I deal with brains, not court trials, Your Honor.
That's right. Yeah, this woman, fantastic performer, also said to be highly entertaining at dinner parties.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, the tales she can tell about saving people who murder their children.
She can also do that ping pong ball trick.
Oh, with her pussy? Yeah. I actually saw that in real life one time in Florida, of course.
How was it?
Extremely impressive.
Was it at the porthole?
No, it was not the porthole. It was a bar. I was looking for an exotic club.
Oh, yes, it's very classy.
I was directed to a bar next to the airport, mm-hmm. and that's where I went, and it was Ping Pong Pussy Night.
Was it called, like, Zooms?
I really do forget the name. And she was remarkable. Wow. She had about maybe 15, 20 of them total, and it was really about maybe 15 feet.
Was she just popping them off into space, or was it like a precision game?
Well, it was a precision game, and so she would hit the guys. This bar was really gross. I'm sorry to get off topic. Never mind.
No, please. Yeah.
All the guys would sit around the bar, you know, and then she would kind of go sit on the floor. It was really greasy, as you can imagine. It wasn't the cleanest place. And then the guys would, you know, like try to get hit by the ping pong.
Oh, yes. And you know what's interesting is she had just come from China training their Olympic team members for the table tennis.
Yes, that's right.
For, like, that sport. Yes, that's amazing. Yeah.
So Leslie's defense strategy was to paint the Menendez brothers 25 and 22 by the time the case went to trial as helpless young boys in the thrall of a pair of sadistic monsters. Like, for example, instead of suits, the brothers wore sweaters to court every day to try to make them look younger.
They look like Stuart Smalley.
Yes, and they are good enough.
So Leslie would also describe them as, quote, adorable, and would treat them in this weird kind of maternal way. She'd rub their backs when they were upset. She'd pick lint off of their shirts. She'd adjust their collars. But most importantly, she never called them anything but the boys.
So Lyle and Eric both had to stand up, like I had to stand up in eighth grade when you pop an unwilling boner.
Literally.
And you have to, like, flip it underneath your belt your belt so you can stand up and not pop a tent.
Or I'd go into the JCPenney's and my mom would come into the dressing room and pull me out and be like, is there enough room in the crotch? And pull on the crotch of the pants and be like, oh, this isn't enough room. Oh, but you just got tiny down there. It's just tiny down there. You'd expect there to be more room in there, but I guess the top of it's bigger. It's your belly that's it's crowding it.
Yeah, it does sound kind of disturbing, but now that I think about it, my mother was very concerned about that. Mothers are concerned about the pants.
No idea what the two of you were talking about.
Parents love their pant play.
I think that's what they did instead of molesting us.
Yeah.
Oh, and besides just calling them the boys, at every turn, she would refer to these two grown men in their 20s as these children.
It's actually very interesting because you can see how this is where the cunning comes in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that they know that in order to make this lie work, in order to come and say that I've been molested literally since the age of 5 to the age of 19 years old, that the way I can sell this is by degrading myself so far to be a mewling, a child who can't remotely stand up for yourself. So they just know that as long as we embarrass the fuck out of ourselves, we will get away with murder.
But I actually understand where the defense is coming from, because when the crimes were committed, they were much younger. So you do want to put them in that position,
though,
don't you?
They said that they were getting molested up until the day.
Yeah.
They were getting molested up until days before the murder. So you're talking literally about a 19-year-old man who is a semi-professional tennis player.
Semi-professional.
But he's getting fucked by his dad against his will. I don't know.
You know what? We're going to say, I don't know.
I actually don't, because that's what we talk about this. I do want to always believe a victim who comes forward and says that they were molested, but we're going to build a case against the fact that they created these claims.
It's a very strong case.
Yes, and it's just hard because it's like you literally... You can't call them out for lying, because then you're going to say so many people could be lying about it, because the lie would just be so terrible, but that's how bad these fuckers were.
Sure.
Yeah, this is how horrible they were. But Leslie Abramson, she even went, like, besides just degrading them, she even tried to paint them as heroes. This is what she said.
I mean, you have these clients who are not criminals, but sympathetic, decent people who are in terrible trouble. And their so-called victims are nothing short of monsters who deserve to be stopped. Just because you're dead doesn't mean you're a victim, a saint. Hitler's dead too.
Think about it. That's great. And that was also kind of a good Joan Rivers impression.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, she also managed to get the word sociopath banned from the trial completely, saying that it was a buzzword that would just confuse jurors.
Oh, is that buzzword that perfectly describes their personalities?
Yes.
That buzzword? Yeah.
Can we change it to mewling pieces of shit?
Why don't we not? We don't say murder. We'll just say caress their head with a bullet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually, she did try to get the word murder banned.
That's the whole point.
She tried to get the word murder banned from a murder trial because the whole thing was that they were using the imminent danger defense in order to not be held culpable in a murder in California. You had to prove that you felt as if your life was an imminent
immediate danger.
Imminent danger.
They thought that the parents they got into a fight. They thought the parents walked into the TV room in order to load guns and to come out and to shoot them. That's literally what they said. And so they had to grab the shotguns and murder them first. That's unbelievable.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it wasn't just, none of this makes sense. Absolutely none of it does.
My father was the least dangerous you could find him in front of the television.
Oh yeah, I mean, every single, couples in front of the television, specifically parents, are just talking about the commercial they're watching right at that moment and really discussing if Tide is a better alternative.
Yeah, what Leslie Abramson was actually successful in keeping out of court was Billionaires Boys Club. The prosecution wanted to do a full screen of the movie for the jurors, but the judge ruled it inadmissible. The only thing that they could do was mention that there was a television program that had aired 3 weeks before the murder that may have had something to do with the murder. They had to keep it extremely vague.
I feel bad for the creators of Billionaires Boys Club.
Think about the kind of traction that would have gotten that film.
I actually do want to watch this film now. As a matter of fact, we should maybe Mystery Science 3000 it at some point.
I would love for us to do a live showing of Billionaire Boys Club. If you want us to do a live showing of Billionaire Boys Club, go on the Facebook group, go on Twitter, tag us in and tell us, say if you wanted to see Billionaire Boys Club.
And we'll dress in matching sweaters.
No, the trial itself was actually two trials, as each brother was tried by a separate jury. This meant that if a witness was testifying about something that only pertained to Lyle, Eric's jury would be excluded and vice versa. And as I said earlier, every person involved in this trial is straight out of a bad TV movie. Craig, the screenwriting partner, he showed up on his day of testimony with two hot girls in miniskirts who wouldn't stop giggling.
I kind of like Craig now.
Craig knows up. It's about presentation.
It is.
Yeah, and even the cops, they were just these buff and tan dudes. Dominic Dunn in his Vanity Fair article said, quote, "Not a fatty on the force."
But that's what my dad always talked about, is that with high-profile cases like this, they move good-looking cops to the front of the lines. My dad was a part of a big murder trial, and they didn't use him for the televised stuff because he looks the way he looks.
What? But the Zabrowskis are made for the screen.
No, we're full of personality, but a lot of times cops also don't want a cop front and center who's full of personality.
I see. Yeah. Wow, I like it. So there are a bunch of Charles Bronson-looking people. Craig comes in like Ric Flair. I mean, this is really entertaining stuff.
No, it's extremely entertaining. And this entire thing, you got to remember, this entire trial from beginning to end was televised. It launched court TV.
Well, the judge apparently hesitantly allowed one camera in the courtroom, and it was put on court TV, and it was also completely done in the middle of Beverly Hills.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the only thing people were talking about. Yeah. It's literally like it was fascinating. It was a fucking people were showing. It was the hottest show in town.
This was a really interesting time for technology and for the human experience, but especially when it comes to visualizing it through television. I mean, cameras in the courtroom, it's been hotly debated ever since.
We talk about this with the O.J. Simpson. When we covered O.J. Simpson, it's the same thing. It got a lot of mileage. You know, all of these people became superstars. Like that sketch with John Malkovich
and Rob Schneider.
Yeah.
About the Menendez brothers on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as far as the extended Menendez family went, they were caught between saying that they had a violent, incestual rapist in their family and getting the money, or saying that Jose was innocent at all this and getting nothing. And in the end, about an 80-20 split on the side of Molest.
Yeah, because, you know, it's just so funny just how, like, money changes people.
I mean, honestly, if you're having that conversation with your wife, you just had a kid, you're thinking about college, Jose is dead.
I'm gonna say
is
this
he going to know if we say he's a molester?
I'm going to say this is an unmarried, just if I was just the cousin who's got nothing to lose and nowhere to go.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, yeah, give me the money.
Oh, I would have walked.
I'll say whatever you want. I'll be like, I'll say he sucked my dick.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying he I would have walked in the court backwards, gaping my ass, and be like, he put it here.
Yeah, and when one of the non-molesties talks to Lyle about this whole thing being a lie, about being a lie, she said that Lyle looked away and said in what was almost his father's voice,
"Well, that's the way he's going to be." Huh?
I don't know what.
Mambo number high.
That again, he's Lou Bega's German.
And the most fucked up part about all of this is that the only time the boys applied the lessons their father taught them was when they blew him away. Mm. Like the time that the only time that they actually followed their father's advice, you know, to really take charge, take what you want, be a man, was when they killed him. In fact, Lyle talked about their father's emotional code.
He made them memorize this and say this every morning that he would like do a weird sort of roll call in the morning where they would sit in the kitchen and he would quiz them about current events in history and then make them recite his morality code.
I mean, the sad thing is, it sounds like this father was actually concerned about his kids.
Yeah.
You know,
worst way possible.
He just didn't really know, like many immigrant fathers from places like Cuba, dare I say, Germany, they're just a colder people, and they've gone through a lot more, and they just want their kids to be the perfect Americans. They have an ideal of what Americans should be.
He was being a real tiger mom.
He was a tiger mom.
Well, this is Lyle talking about the emotional code. He actually recited it from memory in court. This is how well he knew it.
"Today, I will be master of my emotions. If I feel depressed, I will sing. If I feel sad, I will laugh. If I feel ill, I will double my labor. If I feel fear, I will plunge ahead. If I feel inferior, I will wear new garments. If I feel poverty, I will think of wealth to come. If I feel insignificant, I will remember my goals. I will be master of my emotions.
If I feel horny, I will look at a picture of my grandmother taking a shit."
That's a kind of a strange one there at the end.
Oh, yeah.
That's the secret. I mean, really, I just pictured a kitty hanging on from a mountain cliff, from a mountainside, and that's a great, those are great messages.
Actually, that's really good. I kind of like that.
Yeah, pull yourself up, fucker.
That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah, now, the Menendez brothers trial was a pretty controversial subject when it was going on. The whole country was split into pretty much three factions. Those were, the brothers were never molested and they killed for money, they were molested but didn't have the right to kill their parents, or they were molested and they did the right thing in murdering their parents.
You're forgetting the fourth one, which was one held by many women, which is they are goopy boys making me goopy down there.
I do like that.
Chicks were horned up for these kids.
Yeah.
It's really strange because they just look like pieces of shit and they were dressed like little boys.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were dressed like they were just like children. They're talking about how they were getting fucked by their dad.
But they fetishized themselves to many women who want to take care of them.
Yeah, it was definitely. Well, I mean, that was Leslie Abramson's whole plan, was to make the entire country feel like they needed to protect them. And she was a lot of times she was right. She did it. She pulled it off. Now, that last opinion that the parents molested them, the parents deserved to die, that was spurred on by testimony that the brothers gave concerning the abuse themselves. And here is an excerpt of Eric describing what his father would do to him specifically, and I warn you, this is actually pretty graphic.
Don't get horny for this.
Don't get hard for this.
"He would stick things in me as he was giving me oral sex, or at times he would just sit on the bed with his legs up, spread, and with his back to the back of the bed, and he would have me give him oral sex, and he would stick the needles or the tacks into my thighs as he was doing this."
He said, he called it doing the corkboard.
Terrible. Yeah. I mean, this is, even if it is made up, if you are in that jury, if you are in that courtroom, just hearing someone even say that sentence is unnerving and it breaks your heart.
And Leslie Abramson knew that.
Yes, yeah, she absolutely knew that. It sounds horrifying. It sounds fucked up. It also sounds like fairly believable.
Yeah.
But It is important to know that the defense team was advised by a lawyer named Paul Moniz, who wrote the literal handbook on how to defend kids who murder their parents. A lot of the examples of abuse that Eric and Lyle gave, many of these situations were just slightly tweaked versions of stories that were contained in Paul's handbook. And in addition, a former cellmate of Lyle's said that Lyle read every book he could find on the sexual molestation of children during the trial.
He did have to borrow those books from a man who called himself Pee-wee, who liked to suck his own penis.
Well, Pee-wee was very double. He was very friendly.
Lyle also told people that he knew that he was a better witness than Eric, that he knew exactly how to manipulate a jury, and he knew exactly which jurors had cried during his testimony.
And that is true. Lyle was very, very effective. When you listen to him, when he has that emotional outburst about being molested by his father, it is very stirring. It's very hard. Mm-hmm. I sat down with Natalie and we watched it. She was like, she turned to me, she's like, are you sure that they were lying about this?
Right.
And I was like, yes. Like, yeah. That's, he really played it up. Mm. It's just, it's, you're going to now see that's how good they were
right.
at this point.
Yeah.
You'd build himself up to a fever pitch.
And it does put you in a very uncomfortable position. If you are the juror, do you want to defend a man who is, you know, theoretically raping his kid?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a tough thing to.
Yes.
I guess.
That's a guy got to be cut from the jury.
Yeah. Yeah. And the testimony that they gave, it only got weirder as the trial went on. See, Eric claimed that he had heard from some kids at school that if a dude ate cinnamon, it'd make his semen taste better.
Hmm.
So Eric said that he started putting cinnamon into his dad's coffee morning to make semen taste better. But the thing is about that, you ever had cinnamon in, like, say mocha, yeah. You put a little bit of cinnamon. You know you're drinking cinnamon.
Yeah, my semen stays exactly the same.
If I was forced
to... How do you know?
If I was forced to suck a person's cock on a regular basis, the last thing I would be thinking is, like, how do I flavor it?
How do I bump this up?
Yeah, I really want to, like, Dunkin' Donuts it. I want to, like, turbo boost it.
You have your, he's just like, dad, he's just like, he's saying, he's like, his daddy will, like, train him and be like, give me a thumbs up right before you go. And then he puts a bunch of Pop Rocks in his mouth and then finishes it.
Hey, Dad, have you tried having pineapple today? Here, pineapple makes the spunk.
Yes, you know I like it when I make my semen. It tastes like ice cream.
Why does he sound like an Italian plumber
now? Yeah, Eric also talked about how his father had, on a few occasions, lit candles and created a romantic atmosphere before molesting him, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. If you've done even the tiniest bit of research on sexual molestation, particularly fathers or mothers who molest their children, it's not about romance. It's not about love. It's about power. It's about, it's all about power.
You ever fucking seen a lit candle? You ever see a lit fucking candle in a van?
No.
Yeah,
you
God,
can't do
no.
it.
No, because that's like, that just makes you a groovy dude who listens to Rush 24/7.
Yeah, well, actually, the story about lighting the candles, that's probably a bit of a half-truth. A person in Miami who knew the family said that Jose was so bothered by Eric's homosexuality that he had tried a Santeria ritual to try to cure him of it.
So he did the gayest thing possible?
Literally, he just dressed like a witch doctor and just did anything possible to make his son not suck at tennis.
I think my son is gay. I'm going to put some glitter around, light some candles.
But I honestly also think there's also a twisted thing. I think it was literally just because I don't think Eric's actually gay. I don't think that was what why he was mad. He was just bad at everything.
Yeah.
And Jose did not understand how I can't treat my children like little soldiers and they can't go out and work at something every single day until they become perfect at everything that they do. You understand? Some people are just born with no ability to have skills.
Yeah. They just can't do it.
I know he's a sociopath, but is that normal for a sociopath to be able to, like, look at the people who are being affected by what they're saying and register what that means? Like, with the jury and them crying and stuff like that?
That's specifically a psychopathic trait.
Yeah.
And then you can go and you know that if you can fake emotions, you know that you're going to get the societal reactions that you need to succeed.
So you do understand that.
Oh, absolutely. No, these guys, I mean, that is a textbook sociopath reaction. Of course, I mean, that's actually one of the ways that you can tell that someone is a sociopath. If they fuck up over and over and over again, and the only thing they do is try to garner pity back from you. You know, like it's like the guy that hits his wife and says, I just love you so much. You know, it's all about garnering pity. So this whole thing is a sociopathic play.
But it doesn't mean you're like not unfit to. It doesn't mean that you're not fit to stand trial. It just means you understand. You still understand your actions are right and wrong.
Yeah,
you understand that you do right. There are people that are sociopaths that don't kill anybody because they know in the end, probably in some fucked up way, if I kill somebody and go to jail, it's a heck of a lot worse than if I don't.
That's exactly what it is. Most sociopaths don't kill because they have nothing to gain from it.
Right.
That's the whole thing. The only thing that a sociopath, everything that a sociopath does is to advance their own agenda, whatever that may be.
And especially if you go to take the one thing that they have in society, which is money and their status. And they saw their parents been like about to cut them off, and then so they kill them, and now they have to cover their fucking tracks no matter what the cost, even if it means dressing up like a little boy and saying that you fucking try to make your father's cum taste better.
Cinnamon day. Monday is cinnamon day, don't forget.
And you know, these kids, their entire lives, there was never any sign of physical abuse, and definitely no sign of the particularly brutal abuse that Eric claimed his father had subjected him to.
I mean, other than the intense tennis training and things like that, right?
I mean, I'm talking the sexual abuse. Yeah. I'm talking anal rape of a 9-year-old.
Yes.
I'm serious.
Is that the name of your first book?
No. I'm talking anal rape of a 9-year-old.
It's intense. That's an intense sentence.
It is.
Good God.
But you know, I feel like now, which is really fucked up, is now we got a new sign whether or not a kid is being molested or not if he's constantly begging his father to go to fancy brunches.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, well, the only corroborating evidence was a conversation that Eric had supposedly had with one of his cousins when he was about 13. Now, of course, this is another thing. We don't know if this is actually true. We don't know if the cousin was coached, if the cousin is lying under oath. Regardless, this is the testimony of that cousin.
He asked me if my dad ever gave me massages.
And did you understand at that point what he meant?
No, I didn't.
And do you recall basically what your response to him was?
Well, at that point, I got the feeling, I'm sure he let me know this, but he was actually trying to find out if any of these massages were normal. And my response to him was that I wouldn't know. I didn't have a father around. My parents were divorced then. And I really couldn't help him.
Let me ask you this. He asked you whether your father gave you massages.
That's right.
You said he was trying to find out if it was normal. Was there something else he told you about the massages? Like where they were?
Yes, he did.
Okay. What did he say about where the massages were?
Well, he told me his father was massaging his dick.
Hey, cousin, hey, what's going on?
How are you, man?
I'm good
to see you.
Street Fighter 2 rules.
Oh,
right?
So fun, so, yeah. So. Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Your dad ever massaged your dick?
No, what is that? No, Street Fighter 2 is great.
Street
man.
Fighter 2 is really good.
I play with what,
Blanca.
Bison? Yeah, Blanca. Great. Yeah.
I mean, but that also goes completely in contrary with everything that Eric and Lyle had actually said, because they said all of their abuse testimony was them doing things to their father. And then now all of a sudden it's being turned around to where their father is doing things to him. It just none of this makes sense. Absolutely not bit of it makes sense.
It is strange. It's a strange conversation for a 13-year-old to have with his other cousin, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
a weird one. Yeah. But on the other hand, we don't know if the conversation ever actually happened.
Don't know if it happened because literally they were trying to make money.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So
you don't know. And that's what's fucked up. And also think about this, right? The prosecution came out and laid out their case saying that they killed their parents in order to get money. It took them 3 weeks to do it, and they went blap, and they were like, and this is, it's solid, book them. This comes as a complete surprise after they've already done their whole case. Defense takes over the court case, right? This now is over 6 months of talking about them getting raped by their father.
Yeah.
Right.
And so they're just pounding these people. Not like Jose did to the children.
Yeah. Possibly.
But they are really
not due to
the children. But they're literally, the prosecution is like taken aback by what is now taken over. This circus that's just rolls in.
Not only that, but the prosecution is not, I mean, they're thinking that they're in the clear. They're thinking like, God, of course this is bullshit. The prosecution right. had a psychological witness in their back pocket that could have come in and dispelled all of this shit. Mm-hmm. But they didn't even think that it was necessary. I mean, they were like, nah, these guys aren't fooling anybody.
It seems to me they did what OJ did. They just made, they put the LAPD on trial, and it looks like they put Jose on trial, and he's a corpse. So exactly he can't really help himself.
Yeah, basically, a person that can't speak for themselves becomes the center of their whole defense.
And even if he would have lived, he still wouldn't have had like much of a mouth. Got it out there. Sad. Bad for him.
Yes. Guess we gotta throw out all this gum.
No need for it now.
Well, like I said earlier, this whole thing, it's a TV movie. It even had a dramatic, climactic gotcha moment. This is Eric being questioned about the trip to buy the shotguns in which the brothers had claimed that they had tried to buy handguns, but when they were told there would be a 15-day waiting period, they opted for shotguns instead. This is the prosecution cross-examining Eric.
Now, you're telling the truth about everything in this case, aren't you?
I'm telling the truth to the best that I can.
Okay. And even though you've lied in the past, you're telling the truth now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Did you truly go to the Santa Monica Big Five store on the morning of August 18th to buy these handguns?
Definitely. And without a doubt, I did.
You and Lyle did?
Yes.
And you and Lyle actually looked in this case and you selected these guns and you were told you couldn't leave the store with those handguns because there's a 15-day wait?
Yes.
Mr. Menendez, did you know that Big Five stopped carrying handguns in March of 1986?
No, I don't know that. Mr. Kuriyama, there were guns there, and we did look at them, and he did say we could not carry them anymore.
Oh my God, that's where I wish, like, Pitbull, the DJ, would have showed up and just been like, bum, 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 bum. That if you're that lawyer, you're just like, this is fucking beautiful.
Yeah, you can kind of feel the Cuban come out of here, because you know, as soon as he said, he's like, you know, they did not sell the handguns after March 1986. And then for a second, he was about to go, oh!
He didn't want to show that
they were getting to him.
Yeah.
No, it seems pretty obvious to us in hindsight, like it pretty much always does in our episodes. These guys were lying about almost everything. Seemed obvious to the prosecution as well, who, like I said earlier, didn't even bother to bring in their expert witness. But the performance of Lyle and Eric Menendez was good enough to deadlock both of their juries on the charges of first-degree murder, causing the judge to declare a mistrial in both. And those that voted for murder were in the minority. Hmm. Only three of them on Lyle's side and five on Eric's held out to send him to the gas chamber.
The strangest thing is, theoretically, one could have been found guilty and one innocent.
Yeah. Yes.
Theoretically. I mean, for the same crime.
Well, yeah. I honestly think that was a part of it because Eric and Lyle stopped talking to each other during this trial, and I think a lot of it was is that if they had to pick and choose who was going to get the heavier punishment, it was going to be Lyle.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the aggressor. He was the one that had planned the whole thing. And so with the second trial, though, everything changed because they were completely, the prosecution was taken aback by the sexual molestation allegations. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't know how to handle it. So now they know, like, well, now we know how to talk about this and disprove all of that.
So after the mistrial, they've been in jail now for what, three and a half years?
Six.
6 years. After the mistrial, do you walk out of the courtroom? Are you free to go?
No, absolutely not. Yeah. When a mistrial is declared, that just means they have to do it again.
Yes.
But the prosecution does have the opportunity to not, I suppose.
I suppose. I'm not sure.
I actually don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would think.
I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
Are you not a lawyer?
No, I barely graduated high school and college. I got a BA in theater.
Not bad.
That does nothing.
It's good.
Yeah, fine.
You'll do great on the witness stand.
Well, the second trial, much different than the first. First of all, the brothers are tried together in front of a single jury. Second, The judge learned his lesson and allowed no TV cameras in the courtroom whatsoever. Mm. But most importantly, the judge used a legal footnote in a recent, at the time, Supreme Court decision to bar the self-defense argument from the court, saying it didn't apply because it was the brothers, not the parents, who initiated the final physical confrontation. And without the sexual abuse storyline to lean on, the defense collapsed. And on March 20th, after 4 days of deliberation, Lyle and Eric Menendez were convicted of two counts of first-degree murder as well as conspiracy to commit murder. Both were sentenced to life without parole. Lyle currently works as a janitor in a prison near Tehachapi, while Eric is a groundskeeper at a prison outside of Sacramento. They're about to get the People versus OJ treatment in an upcoming NBC miniseries as well. They've both been married. Lyle twice.
God, they've been married twice.
Well, Lyle's been married twice. But we'll cover those relationships on our upcoming Women Who Love Men Who Kill episode. As far as to how the brothers are doing in prison, their aunt said, quote,
"People hate them."
People hate them? I can't believe it. This is why you should never talk to a janitor or a groundskeeper.
Never talk to them. Never get close to them.
No, I was friends with my janitor in high school.
No, I was too. We had Janitor Bob. His office smelled just like tobacco. It was great.
Yeah, ours was named Joe Freddy.
Yeah, that's horrifying.
He had two first names.
Yeah, Joe Freddy.
Joe Freddy.
Also sounds like he might work at a place called Mr. Buffalo's. Wow. What a great story, man.
Yeah, that's the Menendez brothers.
That was insane. I mean, this was ingrained in us as children. This was a huge story.
I mean, this all happened when we were about 5 years old. That's when the murder actually happened. Mm-hmm. So by the time the trial came around at about like 92, this is when we were really first starting to pay attention to the news.
And it was also when we really started to hate our parents. They were extremely uncomfortable.
I remember this being pounded in our head. I remember them because it was the big ones, right? It was Menendez brothers. You got Nancy Kerrigan and Tanya Harding.
Oh, yeah.
And then you had Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah.
That's right.
Lorena Bobbitt's a good story we should cover, too.
Yeah.
She chopped that penis off, and now he is a fucking porn star.
Yeah, Franken penis.
You know what? I think we just covered it. That's pretty much the whole story. There's not a lot to that
that's
one.
Really. Actually, yeah, Lorena Bobbitt's pretty good. Cut and dry.
Yep. That's good. We'll give you the cliff notes. The guy was beating her. He cut her cock off. She cut his cock off, threw it in the woods.
Yeah.
As she was driving, which is a funny thing to throw out your window.
It is a funny thing. You know what? We are slowly turning into the satanic version of Wait, Don't Tell Me. The more we do these verbal puns.
All right.
So I want to thank everybody that gives to our Patreon every single month. Like I said, last week, we just hit $10,000. This money is so fucking useful to us. It's so helpful. You really changed our lives here. If you want to give, go to patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left. There are rewards for every single level. If you guys out there, we got to apologize if you're out there and you've been waiting for a t-shirt. We had one of our t-shirt guys got sick. So we've been having a transition time between people. We promise we'll get to you very, very soon. Thank you so much for being patient on this.
Yeah.
But we'll have your t-shirts out to you extremely soon.
And he got butt flu.
He did get that. Yes, butt flu. If you do need a motivation to donate to the Patreon, we're just a couple thousand dollars away from me quitting Fox News.
Yeah.
Please help him quit because literally it is horrible over there.
And I also want to say to our teacher guy who got sick, get well, Jose.
Yes, thank
Feel
you
better.
For everything. Oh, Jose, unfortunate name for this episode.
Unfortunate. Yes. He's probably felt real weird during these last two episodes. Yes.
Well,
but,
you're a good Jose. Yeah.
you're not one of the bad Jose's.
Yeah, not one of the bad ones. Oh, and we also want to thank everybody who bought tickets on the first day for our upcoming Seattle and Portland shows. Guys, if you haven't gotten tickets to that yet, we can tell from the first day sales, this is going to sell out. Both of these shows are absolutely going to sell out.
And we've been having so much fun at the live shows. You got to do it, man. It's so much fun. Everybody getting together. Everybody's a maniac.
Yeah.
We hang out for a long time. Everybody gets drunk and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Go to cavecomedyradio.com/live to get tickets to those shows, as well as tickets to our Washington, D.C. show coming up on October 29th.
Can't wait. We're going to be performing with Weird Al, which will be a dream come true. Also, thank you guys so much for watching the adult Adult Swim live stream.
Yeah. Yes, please keep checking it out. It's going to be every Friday, 7:30 p.m. EST. It's on the fucking adultswim.com/stream/stream on the left. Please check it out. Those live numbers really help us. And call in. We're getting better at the calls.
Yeah, much better.
And you guys are getting better at the calls.
Yeah, you guys got to get better at the calls.
That stoner dude was so rad.
Yeah.
Yes, he was very stoned.
I love all the weird calls. And we were debating, like, asking questions that might solicit better answers, but I think we're just going to keep on asking what the hell you're calling for.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And just remember, when you go to sleep tonight, ask yourself,
how much money would it take for you to have sex with your father?
That's good God.
And you know what? And for Lyle Menendez, $14 million.
That's what it turns out. We also want to thank Jesse Gold.
Yes, we want to thank Jesse Gold for making the last podcast on the left live video intro. You're fucking great, man. We really appreciate it. And we'll be thanking him on the live stream as well.
Yes. Oh, we'll be thanking him, all right.
Yeah,
what does that
course.
Mean? What are you going to do to him?
Nothing.
Sounds.
I'm going to light some candles first. And then we're going to play the corkboard game.
That's extremely nefarious and disgusting. And thanks for supporting all the shows here on Cape Comedy Radio, Abe Lincoln's Top Half for Politics, Roundtable of Gentlemen, Good Drunken Fun, Page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities, The Lucky Bone Show.
Yeah, go to Mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks. I'm going to be putting out a new episode soon. The last couple of weeks have been fucking insane over here, so I haven't been able to put one out, but I hope to put one out this week.
Next, and follow us on Twitter. I am at Henry Loves You.
And I am at Ben Kissel. At Marcus Parks is at Marcus Parks for all things social media. I'm Ben Kissel 1 on Instagram.
I'm at Dr. Fantasty on Instagram.
At Marcus Parks on Instagram.
And you can follow Last Podcast on the Left on Twitter and Instagram at LP on the Left.
Yes. And exciting t-shirt news. We will be getting shirts for all the shows.
Yeah. Damn. Very, so very soon. Great. Yeah. Very soon.
You don't have to be nude anymore, you fucking perverts.
Or you can be.
Yeah. Our whole t-shirt system is about to get completely automated. So we're going to be able to do t-shirts for all the Cave Comedy Radio shows. We're going to be doing some real weird shit with Last Podcast on the Left. We're going to be bringing back old t-shirt designs that were limited edition in the past. We're going to be having a whole bunch of real cool shit is going to be happening. And remember, guys, the reason why we're able to do all this cool shit is because you gave to our Patreon.
Because you gave.
And the more you guys give, the more cool shit that we can continue doing for you guys. Yes. I mean, this is so fucking great. You're making this amazing macabre shit our lives, which is what we've always wanted.
We're going to do a big shaving party where everybody shaves each other.
Is that right?
Yep.
We'll call it the Lyle Menendez party. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gene.
Hail me, please.
And may Goostalation.
Fuck! What is a cuck?
A cuck?
Yeah, what is a cuck?
I think it's a guy who likes to watch men have sex with his wife.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
But he likes it, so it's not bad.
Yeah, he likes it, but sometimes, you know, he gets like halfway through and realizes that he really doesn't like it.
Yeah, because it seems like they're really rough with his wife. Yeah.
It's also like an insult that some males who like pretend to be alpha males on Twitter, which by definition, if you are violently tweeting, you just look like a dumb Nancy Drew in real life. They call people like fake conservatives, they'll call them cucks.
Oh. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which fake conservative means that you're not racist.
I thought it was like a chicken thing.
No, that is actually the original cuck, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Or is it a cluck?
Oh, speaking of
fucking idiots.
Speaking of animals, my first two names on the shout-out list today are animal-related, Marcus.
What are they?
Bunny Anderson and Joel Fish.
I know Bunny Anderson. She's from Atlanta.
Isn't that fun?
Hail Satan.
Bunny and Joel. Let's see here. I also got Ellie Brown. Thank you so much, Ellie.
Ellie! She lives in Portland. She's going to come see our show in Portland.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
I can't wait for Portland.
Yes, Ellie, I'm going to see you soon. Yes, and then you'll pay for it, won't you?
Stay away from the show.
Pay for what?
I don't know what he's talking about, Marcus. We got this guy, Dylan Worley. He's a great guy. He sounds like he's a fun person. Kyle Babin, Sophia Frost, Laura Kelly, David Young, and Fresky.
Fresky?
Yeah, Fresky. I mean, should I read the whole list now? You guys say another couple of names.
Yeah. Seamus Stimson, hello. Simon Woolley, what's going on, bro?
Simon Woolley!
How's the UK? Still fucking backwards?
We'll see Simon Woolley in the United Kingdom, of course. Simon's one of our favorites.
Yes. Timu Milamaki. Alice Herman. Shane Bagwell. Nicholas Agnew. Sam Jacobs. Allison Mahoney. Les McGinnis, what's going on, bro?
Hey.
Troy, what up, brash? Olivia McCray, hi. Hail Satan. And Ben.
I gave $5.
Are you giving money to yourself?
Yeah.
Got John Lopez, Ryan Glashine, Joe Richter, Joe Stanton, Andrew Parker.
Yay. www.seedandspark.com/studio/crypta.
Hillary Harris. Tony. Cole Callahan. Brioni Ward. Adam Roberts.
I gotta say, I got the coolest fucking names on the face of the planet this week. Mike Hellbound.
Nice.
Hathaway. Very fun. Ingrid, my middle name. That's her last name is my middle name. So that's probably a funny joke, but I thought I get it.
I wonder what it is. What is your middle name?
Ingrid. I don't know. She's funny, though.
Okay.
The Moon Shoots. So that sounds like something you have after a bad breakfast. Andrew Russell. Austin McNamara. Thank you for Nom. Jill Skinner. And Old Dirty D-Bone.
Yeah. Kimberly Buonotuarta.
I fucked that up.
Buonorata.
Is that any better?
I don't know.
Gray Rogers. Josh Center. Miss Amelia Superhero. Hail Satan to you. I know you. Taylor Martin. Marwan Abu Jaude. Hail Satan. Hales Fuller. Michael Tromov. Hail Satan. Brian Maul. Gavion Peters. Jennifer. Devin Seth. Lou Bronchard. Jason Chapa.
All right.
Mark Alonge. Daniel Walker. Matthew Swan, L. Housey, Riley Hinchel, Leela Shayak, Ollie Ryan, Andrew Maiman, Andy Hutchings.
All right, I got Ashley Pillow. That's kind of a fun place to put your head at night. Michelle Derleth, Lee Griffiths, Hannah Warren, Alistair. Ooh, scary. Alistair. Kevin Childers, Shelby Robertson, Matt Back. Matt Back, were you by any chance a high school wrestler for Aquinas? Okay, answer me back.
Did you guys have sex with each other?
I didn't have sex with Matt Back a couple of times. Brian Hawk, Jared Chavez.
Melissa, Rob Deal. What is the deal with Rob Deal?
You're such a dick.
I am going to commit suicide.
Oh, suicide, good.
Norman Pineda, Cooper Wilhelm. Dick Forge.
That's not a name.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is technically. Yeah. It's like whatever it is.
Wow.
Daniel Platt. Danielle Marlin. I know you very well. I'm really happy you're going to come to the Seattle show. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. Let's get drunk at each other. I know you like jizzies. You're fucking stealing for Jackie. And Mike, the Cherry.
Henry, what was the name of the guy with the name Dick that we talked about on the round table of gentlemen?
So drunk for all of those.
Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember if we ever did that.
Dick Bunch, not Dick Bunch. Ronnie Dykes.
Ronnie Dykes.
he's a fun guy.
I'll scissor you to death.
I got Liz Ainsley, Adam Latuze, Emily Johns. Christopher Codina, Drunken Brad, Jeremy Hansen. Hey, Jeremy, you're around a lot. David and Demelza, Allison Webb, Michael, George O'Connor, Daniel Ruff, Neil Grimes, Holland Reigns, and Julian Maltese.
Julian Maltese! Go fuck yourself!
No, leave her. I love her. Brian Hawk, Jared Chavez.
Is Jared? I think
you said that twice. Did you say both of those twice?
Did I say it?
Yep.
Okay. Let's see. Matt Back. I'm reading the list upside down.
Yeah.
All right. Sarah S. Adam Crilly. Jennifer McIntosh. Leslie Gray. Megan Byrne. Nora Walensky. Christine Balkin. And Jesse Irene. Thank you guys so much.
And last but not least, we got Bryce Klusek. Evan Maurer, Dwayne Owens, Lucinda Boakman.
Oh, Lucinda Boakman, what's up?
Hey, Joe Harvey, Kaylee Williamson, Claude Wilson, our favorite kid in all the universe.
What a good little boy he is. What a tight, good little boy.
I don't know about all. He's a great kid. No,
Kaylee, we also know. She came to our show in Los Angeles, and she is lovely.
Hey, Kaylee. Awesome. Kyle Rupert, Megan Locapo. She's around a lot. Christian Earnshaw, Kate McGranigan, Bill Williams, Susie May, Empire of Dreams.
Weird.
Eric Postlewaite.
Yes. What's going on, bro? He's from Baltimore.
Shelby Moe. Aaron Atchison. Martin.
Martin!
Martin!
That's great.
The Conversationalist Podcast. Sarah Klass. Derek Devereaux Smith.
Yeah. What's going on, bro?
Hey, bro. and Andres.
Andres!
Cool.
Well, I hope all of you are fertile.
Mm-hmm.
I hope all of you make love this evening.
Eat a sugary snack just for fun.
Something cute. Break that diet.
Yeah.
Have a cheat day.
Cheat day.
And I hope that you don't die.
Well, we all will. Yes, that's true. Not soon.
Not soon.
No, we have long, beautiful lives ahead of us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Ah, hail game.
Hail me.
You bitches!
Magustalations.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.